The following is an at-will presentation.
Angels and gods and aliens, please help me. I pray for myself and pray for my family and friends and lovers and strangers and enemies. Shine light down on them and me so I can properly see me. I pray in the name of love, just be, not this, not that, beyond definition, me.
Dear Mom, I'm in love. My heart has been beating in an anxiety-induced frenzy, racing truly over clear skin and a bright smile. Then I remember there's 2,907 miles between us, and that's only accounting for the physical distance. Some days, love feels like a ticking time bomb, waiting to explode to the next time you'd see her, whether it be in seconds, minutes, days, weeks, months, or years. Some days, love feels much less intense, and it feels like a cup of coffee that you made but forgot was there, so you remember and it's like, ah, oh, shit, yes, I still have that coffee. When you put it to your lips, it's not as hot or burning as it was because you left it sitting for 30 minutes, you forgot about it. Yet it still manages to be just as satisfying. I remember the first time she said she loved me. It was after the first real argument we had had, and it was in response to me telling her I wasn't sure whether or not I could continue in this situationship. I was stunned, off guard, and confused, and convinced she had said this because she didn't want me to leave. But I gave her the benefit of the doubt anyway. It took me 10 minutes to say it back. Not because I lied or I didn't feel it, but I was in disbelief that the one person I wanted most loved me too. Love kind of creeps up on you, but not always. Sometimes it is perfectly planned, setting in like the perfect storm, and other times it comes when you least expect it, when you have a million things on your plate, but since you're a sucker for a pretty girl with pretty eyes and a pretty smile, you take her on anyway. I am a pessimistic, stubborn, flighty, indecisive perfectionist, and sometimes I find myself shielding my heart from her. I have a million reasons to, but suddenly I push through that, and minutes after that burst of pessimism, my heart is flooded with images of her, and all that didn't make sense suddenly does. And my stress and anxiety fades, because all I'm concerned with is how will I make this work? How will I keep her in my life? And most importantly, how can I ensure she is happy being in my life? I have a secret I am ashamed of, because I am not certain of how common this is. I have never cared for anyone's happiness as much as I've cared for my own. All my life has been is a series of self-absorbed thoughts. Give me what you have and in return you get nothing. But mother, I have another secret. I think the day you showed me your love and support was conditional. I could no longer love others who didn't cater to my every desire. But mother, she has awoken something within me. I have learned more about love than you could have ever showed me. I have learned, after years of betraying the trust of women I have involved myself with, that not cheating on your partner isn't what makes your relationship superior to others. Maybe try not undermining your partner's existence, their sense of self-worth, their ideas for the future, their thoughts, their opinions, the way that they cry over silly movies, romance movies on the Hallmark Channel, or the fact that it's been 5 years and they're still sad over a month-long relationship that went bad. Who am I to judge? The man who still struggles to cry and in return blows up in anger, not because I have something to be mad about, other than the fact that society reads me as a light-skinned, queer, trans man of color whose experiences of oppression are always being questioned because of my privilege, as if the current privilege I have could ever erase my encounters, my experiences, having my mother telling me my bisexuality was a phase, only in years to come to experience loving many different people across the gender spectrum, or having my father cheat on my mother and even after telling him if he leaves, he wouldn't be my father anymore, having him not being sure if he was going to leave us for this woman. Having my cousin crying to me because her husband decided that because she cheated, it is okay to mark her body with bruises rather than kisses and love, or having a woman in my workplace questioning my manhood because I had yet to start testosterone, or being asked if I speak English because of my blood, where I come from. My mother is an Afro-Latinx woman from the Dominican Republic. but because of my father's white blood, his ability to be white passing, any hint of Afro-Latino is often stolen from me, and it makes me feel detached from where I come from, detached from my blood, my family of darker-skinned goddesses who reside from the island, women of color who have shown me their grace, their generosity with love. Sometimes I am ashamed of my skin. Because of it, I feel distance from the colorist and racist ideologies I know my family will have to live with. But with their love, I have begun to persist and to try to love myself, because I love where I come from. Where I come from is inside of me, but I also love where I am and where I will go, and I will go where my heart is. But since my heart is on many places on the map, I better start saving. So mother, I no longer hold this secret. My secret has been shared. I have begun to unlearn the years of trauma surrounding love and what that looks like, and I love her. My happiness has been rooted in the happiness of others, because being alive doesn't always feel like you're actually living until you learn to love someone, someone's happiness, their future and well-being as much as your own, even if I'm not a part of it. Paul.
Explosive shockwaves can cause situations such as body displacement, emotional breakthroughs, relatable flashbacks, and love.
This is a conversation with a human I love named Paul.
Let's start how we know each other.
Cool.
Yeah. We were on The View a couple weeks ago. They reached out to me. They were like, we would love to do a piece on sexual fluidity. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, I love that idea, but I don't want to make it about, like, my story of sexual fluidity, because, like, I've told my story in different places, and I was like, if I'm going to get this platform, like, The View, like, let's share it. Let's, like, go out in the world. I had done a couple things at the center before, and I just thought it was, like, the perfect place to come. And you were one of the young adults that volunteered to come on the show, and we came and we did this whole conversation with Sarah. How did you first hear that it was an opportunity?
I heard from Peter,
yeah,
one of the social workers in the LGBT center,
uh-huh.
And he messaged me saying, oh, there's this opportunity that's going to be happening within the space, and it's about anything related to the B spectrum.
The B spectrum.
I was like, that sounds pretty rad.
Yeah.
Like, that's pretty dope. Like, why not? Like,
because it's, like, not something that gets that much visibility at all, right?
No, yeah. I mean, I agree. Like, even, like, within queer spaces,
mm-hmm.
I feel like there's still a lot of stigma surrounding anything related to the B.
Right.
I hear it all the time from people who are more strictly like G or L.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I mean, like the most flack that I get, and I've said this before, the most flack that I get is from the G for sure.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's start here. Your name is Paul.
Yes.
How do you identify?
I identify as a mega queer, trans masculine person.
Nice.
Yeah.
People have a really, really hard time, and I know that this is going to sound basic to you because of just the space that you work in,
yeah,
but people have a really hard time differentiating gender identity and sexual orientation and gender expression for that matter. If you could give us like a 101 here real quick.
Of course.
Can you just map that out for us?
Well, I feel like I definitely see what you're saying,
yeah,
because like I've gotten lots of confusion towards the whole gender versus sexuality thing and
right,
how those two things aren't always correlated. And I feel like the easiest way to just break it down is just sexuality is who you want to go to bed with, mm, and gender is who you want to go to bed as.
Mm.
And that's like the easiest way I can like describe it,
mm,
because I feel like who you personally like identify as has nothing to do with the kind of people you want to date.
Right.
Or have sex with,
right,
or not have sex with and just date. Like,
mm-hmm,
who knows? Like, do your thing.
Yeah, totally. Mega queer, trans masculine person.
Yes.
Can you map that out for me? What does that mean?
Cool. I mean, I feel like queer is just a label for not having a label,
mm-hmm,
really.
Yeah.
I'm really, like, weird about labels.
Right.
So I feel like whenever I have to describe my sexuality to people, I just say queer.
Yeah.
'Cause it's, like, the quickest and easiest thing I can say.
Right.
I'll
use the word queer on social media, and again, inside of the community, like, people get so fucking mad about that word. Like, I am not queer. How dare you use that word? Like, you are not a representative of this community. Like, yo, girl, relax. Like, I am not, like, saying that I am. But, like, you know, it's just so funny how people get so worked up about specific words. All right, keep going. I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, the thing with the word queer is that for a really long time, it was considered derogatory.
Right.
So it's just kind of like... For a lot of people, they still don't really know about the whole, like, word reclamation thing, mm-hmm. which exists within, like, many demographics of different people.
God. Across the board, yeah.
So, like, when I feel like when it comes to LGBTQ plus people, like, queer just happens to be that word, mm-hmm. and it's a word that I personally feel comfortable using.
Yeah.
But I make sure not to use it for other people unless they specify.
Right. I wonder if the word queer started out derogatory, or if it started out open-minded, then became derogatory, and now is coming back. Do you know?
I believe it started off just derogatory.
It did.
I think it used to be like an insult that a lot of like cisgender straight people would use towards people who were gay, trans, mm-hmm. or trans and gay, or just something on that spectrum.
Right.
And I feel like queer just became a popular like insult for people who were flamboyant, mm-hmm. specifically like male people who were flamboyant.
Right, right, right.
Yeah.
I think queer actually like started meaning just like weird. Mm-hmm. I want to look this up. Do you have your phone on you?
Oh, no. I do have my phone. I also think queer also has the definition of weird.
Yeah, right? I think that that's actually how it started. origin of word queer. We're doing this right now. Early 16th century, considered to be from German, Q-U-E-R, oblique or perverse. But the origin, yeah, strange, odd. That came first. Interesting. Queer 101. I mean, would you consider yourself strange or odd, Paul?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. I mean, for myself, not you.
Yeah, I mean, personally, yeah, I would consider myself odd, but unrelated to sexuality. I mean, sometimes related to sexuality.
Yeah.
Sometimes I question my taste.
Uh-huh. But, well, I mean, I definitely do that too. How old are you, Paul?
I'm 19.
19?
Yeah.
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in Borum Hill, Brooklyn.
Okay.
I'm still there.
Yeah. You still live at home or?
Yeah, I live at home, but I'm actively trying to do the whole like working thing.
Right.
And like leave.
Mm-hmm.
Preferably like to somewhere on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Don't know where.
Okay.
Somewhere.
Where? Yeah, just like somewhere on the West Coast, California,
yeah.
Portland, Seattle, like the whole spectrum?
Literally anywhere, only because it's like I've had a dream of going out there since I was like maybe like 10, maybe even younger, and I've never been able to go. Like the farthest I've gone was like Florida, and that's over here.
Yo, so it's you like, would love the West Coast. I could see you living in like Oakland too.
Oakland? My friend said the same thing, yeah. Funny enough.
Oakland would be great for you. What were you like growing up?
I was this really sometimes tomboyish, but sometimes femme girl growing up.
Yeah? You would like go back and forth on that spectrum?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Only because I feel like I always knew that I didn't like identify as a girl,
mm-hmm.
but I feel like sometimes I would find myself resisting the whole femme thing, even though I do consider myself a femme person at times, only because of the stereotype that men cannot be feminine.
Right.
So I find that I would often like embrace the whole like tomboyish aspect and constantly be hanging out with my friends, playing with the toy cars from that terrible Disney movie.
Yes, Cars.
Yeah, Cars.
When you make it to Los Angeles, you need to go to Disneyland and ride the ride Cars because it is amazing.
Sounds like a good time.
Yes. How was your relationship with your parents?
I used to be really close to my parents growing up, but after I came out to my mother as bisexual in the seventh grade,
you came out as bi.
Yeah.
Wow. So progressive.
Yeah, she just never looked at me the same way.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, like, she is still a very loving person.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I see the shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that happens.
Yeah.
Where's your mom from?
She's from the Dominican Republic.
She's from, okay. And your dad, too?
My dad's from Puerto Rico.
Puerto Rico, okay. And siblings?
Two.
Two, older, younger?
Older.
Two older. Is there any other queerness in the family?
Not in my immediate family.
Okay.
I have some cousins. Like, I have a cousin who identifies as bisexual as well. But I think she might be the only one I actually know of. Yeah.
So when did you, like, start learning about these things? Because I think you're an entire generation younger than I am. And I remember when I realized that even, like, homosexuality was a thing. Mm-hmm. And then, this is crazy, in middle school, my principal, Dr. Reed, 6th and 7th grade was a man, and then 8th grade came back as a woman, fully transitioned as a principal in, like, a public school in, like, upper middle class, like, white Chicago. It was, like, very progressive for the neighborhood. Like, families left. It was straight. It was, like, wild. But that was my first knowing of this world at all. When did you first start understanding that, like, the world was different than, you know, this cis heteronormative patriarchal society that is shown everywhere?
I feel like I've always known that the world itself wasn't what people made it out to be, but I feel like it wasn't until I actually came out as anything that I actually started to do more research.
Yeah, of course.
Because I knew myself, like, I felt different from everyone else, but, like, I wasn't aware that there were other people who also, like, identified the same as I did. And I feel like I came out as trans at 13 years old.
Oh, wow. Amazing.
So it's like, I remember doing lots of research, like, all the time on, like, hormones or, like, different surgeries. And, like, my view on surgery has changed drastically for what I want for myself from when I was 13.
Totally.
And I feel like the only way that happened was through, like, education of, like, the different parts of the community and what it means to be a trans masculine person in 2017 versus a 13-year-old trans person in, like, I don't remember what year that was, to be honest.
What's the difference between the two?
I feel like when you're younger, well, let me use I statements. When I was younger and first coming up and coming out and trying to, I guess, like, get a hold of myself and accept myself, I would often stray more towards the binary and try to focus on different, like, masculine stereotypes in order to make me feel more secure within my masculinity.
Right.
Even though that wasn't me at all.
But it was what you knew, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can say I firmly believed that there was only one way to be a man.
Right.
And that was to be a masculine, embracing all of the gender norms, like...
Hyper-masculine, toxic,
creature
of a man. Yes.
No, yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Were there people in your family that, like, represented that masculinity?
Oh, yeah, for sure,
totally.
Like, my family is a traditional, like, Christian, like, really deep in the gender norms, like, family.
Did you grow up in the church?
No, my family actually wasn't that religious when I was younger. It wasn't until, like, later on.
Oh, interesting.
That they started to get more and more, like, with it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they hopped on the whole, like, religion bandwagon.
Like, when you were how old?
I would say maybe, like, 14.
So right as this all was happening was kind of when religion came back into the picture for them.
Yeah, I mean.
Was there, like, Bible talk at all when you were younger?
Not a whole lot.
No.
I know my parents, they put me in Catholic school when I was 9. But that wasn't for any, like, reason, like, against me. They just wanted me to go to Catholic school.
To the good school. Yeah, in the neighborhood. Yeah.
They wanted me out of public school and to go to a more, like, academically enriched, like, school program.
Right.
And that just happened to be the Catholic school in the neighborhood.
I mean, and it was the better school?
Yeah. I mean, the education was definitely better. They were a lot stricter when it came to, like, learning and all of that. And I'm an easily distracted person.
Yeah.
Like, public school did nothing for me.
Interesting.
But in Catholic school, I found myself getting, like, things like first honors and things like that.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Celebrated your academia.
Yeah.
Academia.
It made me very sexually repressed, but it's okay.
Well, did you have to wear a uniform at Catholic school?
Yes, and it was absolutely painful.
Oh, tell me. If you're comfortable.
No, it's totally fine. Yeah. I don't have many boundaries.
Okay, cool.
So the uniform was this ugly green attire, that's what I call
attire.
It.
Attire.
It was like this really terrible plaid skirt that was like black, green, and some brown in there.
Woof.
And they would make you wear a yellow shirt and a green vest when you made it to 7th grade, but specifically 7th grade.
Wow.
They somehow thought that was better.
Like, what color yellow? Are we talking like canary yellow or like pastel yellow?
canary yellow.
And like a forest green vest. Mm-hmm. Oh my God.
Some really bright just colors.
Beautiful. What was the mascot for the school? This is middle school or high school?
Middle school.
Middle school.
I went to public
high
school.
Public high school, okay. And that changed everything?
Yep.
Yep. So you actually came out as trans and bi in middle school?
At the end of middle school.
At the end of middle school.
Because I started my freshman year of high school at 13. I was a very young person. I graduated at 17.
Oh, genius.
Yeah.
And what are your friends like at this time?
Oh. Ooh. All right, let me see. I'm trying to think of how can I word this, like, appropriately.
Do you find yourself, do you catch yourself thinking about appropriate language constantly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Only because
I can sense that in you. I love that in you.
I have a problem where I'm a little bit too opinionated.
Okay.
So
I just want to say you can be as opinionated as you want on this show, and if you like, and if you like, I said earlier, if you say anything that you want to like take back, totally fine. But I'd rather have you like go for it than like, you know, tread lightly.
Okay. Well, my high school friends, well, specifically my guy high school friends.
Yes. Yes.
They were very. They're cool people, like fun to hang out with, mm-hmm. fun to party with, but they're very misogynistic.
For sure.
And I find that...
That's just built into the culture, too, right?
No, yeah, for sure, yeah. And I feel like a trend in my high school that I have found that most people were willing to accept someone who identified as, like, a trans guy. Huh. But I guarantee you, if it were flipped and I was someone who was transitioning more to female,
right.
it would probably be an issue.
And dangerous, yeah.
No, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's only because, like, everywhere, including my high school, it's socially acceptable to be anything masculine to be a man, mm-hmm. but to be a woman is a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's the entire world, right?
No, yeah. And yeah. I feel like that's when I first started to learn about all of that. Super fun stuff.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Just really like heartwarming.
No, yeah. Actually, I had a recent thing where I actually hung out with my high school friends at a party the other day. And I'm not really too sure if you know what dysphoria is.
Uh-huh.
Cool.
But we can tell.
All right, cool. I should probably define it.
Uh-huh.
I would say dysphoria is really just having like any sort of like discomfort or disconnect to your body.
Mm-hmm.
And I had not experienced any, like, gender-related dysphoria until I hung out with my high school friends at that party.
Interesting. Wait, what's the difference between dysphoria and dysmorphia?
I would say dysmorphia is something that more, like, anyone could really have. And, like, gender dysphoria is really just catered to people who are more under the trans spectrum
somewhere. Okay, copy.
Yeah.
All right. So you felt uncomfortable?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Like how?
Basically, I feel like for the first time in my life, I felt like one of those over-the-top, like, productions that they make about trans people to try and educate the masses.
Right.
Like, there was this one video, for sure, that showed, like, a trans person going to a locker room and feeling uncomfortable, being like, oh, what if I can't take off my towel and someone walks in, like... And I feel like that's how I felt when I went to this party. And I had full-on clothes.
Right.
So it's like...
You had full-on clothes.
No, yeah. All I could think was...
There was no towel involved here.
All I could think about was, like, what if, like, someone, like, tries to hit on me? Mm-hmm. And then I have to explain myself and all of these different things. Only because most parties I've been to for a while now have been very queer.
Queer-centered, yeah. Totally. Safe spaces.
And this has been a very, like, hyper-masculine,
straight space, party, yeah.
Full of tons of straight boys
really
and straight girls.
I get really uncomfortable in those spaces, actually. Like, I... Like, don't put myself in those environments. Work-related, I have to be in those environments all of the time, right? But, like, thankfully, Hollywood can, like, skew really, really queer the more alcohol's involved. You know what I mean? But for the most part, I understand what you're saying here.
No, yeah, for sure. And I feel like that was the first time in a really long time I've ever experienced any dysphoria towards myself. Mm. And I was like, damn, you know, I mean, I didn't realize, like, constantly going to queer spaces all the time, whenever I take it back a notch and hang out with my more, like, cis straight friends, suddenly I feel super uncomfortable.
Right. Well, you take it for granted, too. I mean, it's like living in New York. You know, you've lived here your whole life. Like, I moved here when I was 20, and I feel like we just take the city for granted living here. You don't really get to take it all in and experience everything that's here because we're here every single day. And it's kind of the same thing with, like, the privilege of having a place like the LGBT Center or having all of those friends, you forget that, like, the rest of the world isn't like us. You know what I mean? When did you first find the LGBT Center?
Easy. Basically, I had a counselor in high school who was trying to push me to go when I was, like, maybe 14 or 15. But I would always be like, no. But then one day we take a field trip with the GSA at my school and we go. And I remember feeling really uncomfortable that I never came for a really long time. Only because, like, I had never seen things like voguing and openly femme gay people and things like that. And I was just taken aback. I was like, yikes. That was, like, literally my immediate reaction, to be honest.
It was a lot?
No, yeah, it was a lot.
Yeah.
Like, it took me a while to actually, like, open up my mind and, like, really get used to all of these different, like, aspects of the queer community itself.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say I started, like, actively going more when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
But then I would do, like, an on and off thing until eventually I just started going every day.
Right. You were going every day?
Yeah.
Wow. I love that.
I will even be there today.
Nice. So. Amazing. And you work there now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you do there?
I do an internship related to substance use. And basically I'm, like, a peer coach.
Okay.
And I help people who are going through issues with, like, substance use or even, like, just sexual health issues or just any issue, really, but it's just mostly on substance use. And my job is to basically, like, talk to them, like, help make different plans for them on how to, like, overcome, like, different, like, triggers surrounding the entire thing.
You have history in that space?
Of course, yes.
Yeah? You want to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. I drink a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
That's, like, a thing.
Still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something I work on. Mm-hmm. I now just do things in moderation.
Okay.
But I have a tendency that when I am at a space, I have a really hard time actually managing how many drinks I'll have. And I'll be like, I'll only have, like, one cup. And then it turns to two cups, then to three, then to four, to five.
Yeah. Uh-huh. No, I understand. I'm the same type of drinker.
I mean, luckily my tolerance has gone up quite a bit.
Uh-huh.
And I have to thank the constant, like...
Yo, but you're still young. Like, honestly, the second I turned, like, 25 and I was still drinking like that, like, my body just was like, fuck you. Like, you can't do this anymore. And, like, I couldn't. I've been sober now for 2.5 years. Like... And enjoy it while it's young, but know that it gets bad.
Well, one thing I will say, one thing I appreciate about my drunk self is that I don't make too many reckless decisions.
Right.
It's really just me being sluggish and lazy, or I'm just dancing really badly a whole lot.
Yes.
So it's not that bad. I just feel terrible the next morning.
Do you feel like you get more creative when you're under or under?
Oh,
I've never said that before, but under
actually,
the influence.
I think it's the opposite.
It kills it.
Yeah, it completely kills it for me. Only because my attention span becomes, like, even more shot than it is when I'm sober.
Right.
And that says a lot because I have a really terrible attention span when I'm sober. So it's like when I drink or even when I smoke, it's just like it's just one of those things where it's like suddenly all of my creativity is, like, gone.
Right. It gets pulled.
Or what I make just sounds really stupid. Yeah.
What are your creative outlets?
I like to paint.
Nice.
I like to sketch. I like to do poetry. I like to write songs. I like to sing songs. I like to dabble in GarageBand as well.
Like, GarageBand's fun.
With the faux smart keyboard.
Yes.
Like, my next step is to buy a keyboard and to... get better at that.
Cool. I love that.
Because besides, like, my current social work thing I have going on, I'm also just a musician trying to make it in New York City.
Nice. So that's the goal.
Yeah.
What do you want to be when you grow up? You want to be a musician.
No, yeah. I mean, It's actually really funny because I used to not feel that way.
Uh-huh.
Since I was 13, I had a dream of being an English teacher.
Oh, really?
And it wasn't until my first year of college where I was like, nope.
Not for you.
No, not doing that.
You love school, though. I have a feeling, like, growing up, you really enjoyed school.
Oh, yeah. I love school. I just hate homework. Mm-hmm. I am terrible at assignments, but I'm great at tests.
Mm.
Like,
I was the same exact way.
Yeah.
I could take a test all day, every day, but I never read a book. I never, like, never. I read one book in high school. The Da Vinci Code. That was it. I hated school.
I read lots of books in high school. For me, it's just more like I don't like reading
but
when
you were,
it's like an assignment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, you weren't reading like curriculum books. You were reading like your own books outside, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I've definitely liked some of the curriculum books.
Right.
Like, what was it? Mice and Men.
Yeah, Mice and Men.
I love that
great
one.
Book. I read it after school.
Yeah, there was also another one called Flowers for Algernon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wonderful. Oh, my
Genius.
God.
Genius. what's your all-time favorite book?
Easy. I don't have a lot of favorites in a lot of different regards,
oh, okay.
but when it comes to reading, I do.
Yeah.
My favorite book is called A Thousand Splendid Suns by Khaled Hosseini.
Mm.
And I also love The Kite Runner by the same guy.
Yeah, Kite Runner is beautiful. I haven't seen A
Wonderful.
Thousand Splendid Suns.
The story is not too different from The Kite Runner,
mm-hmm.
but it explores two different people versus The Kite Runner that explores the story of this one guy
right.
just going through it.
Mm-hmm. Fully going through it.
But A Thousand Splendid Suns is really just like exploring the stories of these two different people. And it's like taking place somewhere within the Middle East, just like The Kite Runner and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
That's just really dramatic and just, ooh, but the writing is so beautiful.
Check it out.
Just, you really should.
I definitely will.
I would give you a copy, but I literally just gave it away to somebody.
It's all good. I'll find one.
Yeah.
When is your birthday?
December 1st.
December 1st.
I'm a whole Sagittarius.
Yeah, you're a Sag. Have you ever looked at your full chart?
Yes.
Yes,
I am an astrology buff.
Okay,
it's like my religion.
Okay, amazing. Let's talk about it. What's your moon in?
My moon is also in Sagittarius.
Oh, you're a double Sag. And
yeah.
your rising?
Libra.
My rising's in Libra, too.
Really?
Yeah. That makes sense. Let me ask you a question. Is there any work in trans astrology? Is anybody doing, like, trans astrology work at all?
I actually have no idea.
That's interesting. I've never thought about that before.
I feel like one thing I definitely do have, like, hang-ups on, like, to be perfectly honest, when it comes to the whole, like, astrology thing, is when it comes, like, when you're, like, trying to figure out your birth chart and it asks for your gender.
Right, yeah.
Because I'm like, well, are you reading that more towards, like, energy, or are you talking about when it comes to chromosomes?
Right.
Or, like, what?
Yeah, it's a problem. I was thinking about
it
last night.
I do it based off of aura and, like, the kind of energy you give me.
Uh-huh.
Specifically for people who identify as, like, gender fluid or non-binary.
Right. Can we talk about all of these? Because there's, what, 72 different Facebook options now?
Yes.
It's something like that, right? 72? What's your take on all of this?
You mean the wide variety of different,
yeah,
like,
just the fact that there's so many words now that exist. And, look, like, I'm not saying it in a bad way. I'm not judging it at all. But, but, like, is it just going to keep getting more and more and more, do you think? Or it's going to go the opposite way?
I feel like knowing the way the world works, it'll probably get more and more. I personally would like it to be less, not because I have anything against all of these different gender identities, but only because I don't believe in gender.
Right.
So I'm like, if we could just stop labeling each other, that'd be cute.
What does that mean, you don't believe in gender?
Because gender itself is like a social construct,
right,
as is biological sex, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course, there's like different like biological sex is a different thing, but it's still in some regard a social construct.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, it was just some old fart who decided that a penis means male and a vagina means female.
Mm-hmm.
But all it is two different organs.
Right.
Same thing for gender identity. I just feel like people feel the way they feel.
Right.
I just don't see why it necessarily needs to fall under a specific umbrella.
Right. Nor does it have to be fixed, you know?
Oh, no, yeah, because calling myself a man is very exhausting.
Is it?
Yeah, because I'm just, like, I'm just a person.
Yeah, you're just a person.
Yeah.
What's exhausting about it? Just the baggage that comes with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that too. Mm. I can say a lot of things about that.
Yeah.
I was working on a piece yesterday for this concert I might be opening at.
Oh, nice.
And I wrote this spoken word where I was talking about privilege, and I was talking about how I feel that a lot of the times, because of the way society reads me, it completely erases any experience or encounter I've had with any oppressive thing.
Hmm.
And it's really depressing, and I feel like that's the thing about being read as male that's really depressing to me.
Hmm.
So any, like, negative experience I have had as being read as a girl is just erased.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Really interesting. When is this concert?
I actually have no idea
yet. No idea. Okay.
I still need to submit my spoken words.
Hmm.
I wrote a new one, but I need to write two more, or I might just go dig into my poetry book and just pull one out.
Yes, 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 yes.
But
what
we'll
do you love about spoken word?
I love how you can just kind of connect whatever feeling you're having to a present moment, or even just like a past moment. There's just something that's really beautiful about spoken word that I don't often find that I achieve within my songwriting.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like spoken word is often more exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the way that you speak it has to be more calculated. It has to be more precise.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, singing and songwriting is about precision, too, but just
different. It's more of a dance. Yeah,
yeah.
I think so.
It's more about taking a couple of notes and connecting it to some sort of experience and making it mean something, mm-hmm. versus when it comes to spoken word, I feel like the words just speak for itself.
Right.
Doesn't need to be any music behind it.
Well, I was just going to say, do you play with your spoken word?
Or
is
I
your
do
spoken
not.
Word solo? Yeah.
My spoken word's more solo. I kind of like it that way.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to maybe eventually trying to take a track and adding it to it later.
Right, right, right.
But as for right now, I'm really content with where my spoken word is at now.
Do you ever mix the two? Like, we'll start a song, break in the middle, do a whole spoken word, and then, like, finish the song?
No, that's a really good idea.
Yes, I love that idea.
I'm definitely gonna look into that. Like.
Yes, I want to get in on that album for sure.
I don't have anything, like sure.
Huh.
Hop on board.
I think we just created a whole new genre of music, spoken word. When did you start doing spoken word?
Well, I mean, I've been writing poetry all of my life, but spoken word is more of a recent
thing. What do you mean
all
of your life?
Literally,
what
since
was your first
I
poem?
Crawled out of the womb.
Stop it. you came out to be or not to be.
That's exactly how it was, actually, my first word. What can I say? But no, I've been writing poetry even when I was in like elementary school. Same thing with songwriting. But I didn't start getting into spoken word until maybe like a year or two ago.
Mm.
But it would really just start off with me just watching a whole bunch of like YouTube videos of people doing spoken word.
There's so much. I get like into wormholes. You can just go for hours and hours and hours.
No, I just love spoken words.
Yeah, me too.
But then I was like, you know what? I'm going to challenge myself and try to write one.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up writing my first spoken word, mm-hmm. which is called Love and Other Things.
Love and Other Things.
Which is about, I have two characters in it.
Wait, when you were how old did you write this?
I think I was 18.
18?
So not that long ago.
Do you want to just read it? I feel like we need to like hear your first spoken word, and then we will hear like your latest spoken word.
Do you want me to read it all exaggerated like a spoken word?
I want you to do whatever you want to do. You ready? You got it?
Yes.
Okay.
Her name is I Love You. I label her with she, her, because I have yet to see a man possess this beauty. She is a vision, a hope, a dream, a sexual awakening. I struggle to unite my sexuality towards her physicality with I love you, with love. Maybe that be because I am a man and I have yet to learn what love is. Or maybe that is unfair. Maybe because I am a man, I have not learned to know what love is. I met a girl named I Like You. Majority meets minority, my heart beats with anticipation. I do not know what love is, for I am a man. I have not exceeded butterflies and rosy cheeks. I have spent my life in infatuation. I love you, she has been far too kind. I like you, I feel she might share in my disdain for everything love. Everything sunny blue skies, Hershey's kiss, caramel sunrise is simply non-existent with her.
for she is I like you. Another name, you're all right, you're okay, you're kind of cute, or let's keep it sexual. She's not I love you, for I love you wants both a mind and body connection, a soulmate. I like you simply wants a body connection, everything body, a karmic love, nothing more, nothing less. She wants to revel in the nothing that at night we convince ourselves means something. But there is truth in I like you. Nothing is something, yet something all in all is nothing. And that's Love and Other Things.
My God. That is your first piece? Are you kidding me? Who were you inspired by growing up? Like, what kind of music were you listening to?
All over the place.
Oh, yeah, across the board.
I'm very well versed when it comes to most genres. I could even listen to opera, to be honest.
I love an opera moment.
I like everything.
Yeah.
Even disgusting bubblegum pop. I like everything.
Yes. Put on some Selena and I am happy.
No, I would say my greatest influence would be most like acoustic indie artists, to be honest, because I feel like when it comes to like my own art, that's what I tend to go more towards. Right. It's like this weird indie folk, sometimes even country kind of hybrid, but not really country.
Yeah. That's okay. I love country music. We don't need to judge country music.
Oh, no, yeah. I also love country music. And I get a lot of stuff for loving country music.
Yeah, I do too. Where did that come from? I mean, that wasn't anywhere growing up, right?
No. That was about the last official relationship I was in, and then a new involvement that ended up springing right after. And I was comparing the two.
I guess, like, Puerto Rican music and Dominican music, there is, like, a country vibe to it.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah, for sure. But I honestly hate that music.
Yeah.
I would say it's probably the one thing I don't like.
Really? You're interesting.
Like, I mean, I could mess with some, like, Latin music, but very rarely.
Yeah.
But that's also because I don't speak Spanish, really.
Oh, so you don't?
I just do not.
Did you grow up with it in the house? Oh, no. Okay.
Yeah.
What's your favorite movie?
My favorite movie? Well, that's hard. That's really hard. All I do is watch movies.
Really?
Yeah. I go to bed at maybe 5 in the morning because I'm just watching movies.
And TV shows or just movies?
Mostly movies.
Interesting.
But it's usually those movies that people don't really hear about. Like those independent films on Netflix that get lost and you have to really scroll for them
to find
them.
Yeah, I've seen them all.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen like every queer movie on Netflix.
Wait, I watched the new Irish rugby one the other night. Did you watch it?
I have not.
It's terrible.
Oh, never mind. I will not watch
it. It's so bad. I like had to fast forward. I'll like start watching a movie. I'll get like 25 minutes in, but like not enjoy it, but like have to know what happens. So I'll put it on triple speed and just
I do that too.
Yeah.
So I understand. Sometimes when a movie seems really slow to me, but I was curious about a specific aspect of it, I just fast forward until I see what I want.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's funny. but hold on, your favorite movie? Give me a couple.
I like The Way He Looks, which is a gay film about a kid who is blind, who ends up having feelings through one of his classmates who he becomes friends with.
Yes, yes, yes.
Adorable. I also saw a new movie that came out on Netflix that I really liked, but it was really sad, but also not sad. And it was called Okja.
Oh, the it's a cartoon, right?
No, it's
OKJA.
Yes.
I've seen it. I haven't, like, I've seen the picture. I know what you're talking about. It's like a monster of sorts, right?
Yeah.
Like a hippo-looking monster.
It's like a mutated pig.
Okay, mutated pig.
Yeah.
All right, I need to watch it.
Yes, it's very sad. Like, if you're one of those people who is all about animals and, like, things like the environment and all that fun stuff, you might cry.
I love crying in movies, though.
You might cry, to be honest. There's a scene that's very sad
to me. I, like, can cry watching a commercial.
Yeah. I feel like watching that movie made me contemplate becoming a vegetarian.
Interesting.
Because I was like, I can't do this. This is so sad. This isn't even a real animal, and I'm still sad.
When I was in fifth grade, I became a vegan for 3 years.
Really? For 3 years?
3 years.
But only 3 years?
And then I was a raw foodist after that. I was only eating fruits and vegetables. It's interesting. I'm like looking at a parallel of sexuality and diet in my head right now. There's something there.
I feel like most queer people I've met have told me that they were vegetarian.
At one point, yeah.
or they're currently.
Or they're doing something. If you are doing the work on yourself, that you're like looking at yourself and looking at who you are and what you represent and like what you like, that is inherently like the first step in a spiritual exploration. Because if you can't see yourself and do the work on yourself, you won't be able to see or do anything outside of yourself.
I completely agree.
I love that idea so much. I think diet is a part of that too, but like that's more like fringe.
No, yeah. I completely agree, only because when it comes to people, there's many different aspects to health. Mm-hmm. And if one of them is lacking, the rest can be lacking.
Right.
So like there's like mental health, there's like physical health,
emotional.
Yeah, emotional health, or even like spiritual health. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, for example, when your physical health is shot, oftentimes your mental health and emotional health and sometimes even spiritual health will follow. Like when you get diagnosed with a really terrible disease, or let's say you've been starving all day, like it can literally take a toll on other aspects of you. So if you're not working on everything as a whole,
all at once,
you can find that you might even fall into a really deep, dark realm of depression.
Totally.
And I feel like a lot of the times people ignore all of these different layers to what actual like health is, or what it means to even be healthy versus unhealthy.
Well, I think we're living in a society where everyone just wants to like take a pill or like watch a video and everything's fine, right? And it's just not the case. Like if you don't do the work every single day, like it's not gonna be there.
No, yeah, for sure. I completely agree. I feel like one of my favorite sayings, like I do not remember who said it. Like it was honestly just probably some Tumblr quote somewhere.
That's to be honest.
But it's more like happiness isn't a destination, it's just a journey.
Right.
And I feel like if you're not constantly doing the work, you can't expect to have like to reach your goal. Even if it's a goal that only lasts 5 minutes, because let's face it, like if you're expecting to be happy every day for the rest of your life, that's really unlikely.
Yeah, but that's also unhealthy too. Like you need to understand the spectrum.
No, yeah. I feel like when it comes to the whole argument of optimist versus pessimist, I'm very weird because it's like both of those things, like to extremes, are really terrible.
Right.
Because like when you're extremely optimistic about every single thing in your life, oftentimes you'll forget to actually see the more realistic like aspects of it. Versus when you're pessimistic, you just let opportunities go by.
Right.
So I feel like it really needs to be like a balance.
Well, I think the balance is being a realist.
No, but I'm very much a realist, and I find myself definitely leaning more towards pessimism sometimes. But then my lovely Sagittarius brings the optimism back.
All right, good. So you got like that double Sag in there. Like, hold on to that positivity.
I got to. I got all of us Earth.
And then that Libra rising is like, learn, 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 learn. That's so funny. Is there anything more that you want to talk about your own gender identity and the representation of your specific identity in the media and like on social media even and on film and television?
Yeah. Most times when I see trans people like portrayed in the media, they're always like specifically like trans women.
Trans women, right.
And they're always portrayed in these really negative roles of being sex workers. Right. Not that there's anything wrong with being a sex worker.
Yeah, hey girl, get yours.
it's more like they'll just take negative stereotypes surrounding sex workers and push it onto the trans women in the movie or the TV show. And sometimes they're not even portrayed by actual trans women, which makes representation even worse because it's just not trans people playing trans people.
Well, did you see that RuPaul yesterday said that he wants Willow Smith to play him in a movie? Willow Smith. Isn't that problematic? Willow Smith, female.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when it comes to the whole issue of gauging whether or not something's problematic, there's so many gray areas.
Right.
I am a firm believer that this is a world full of opinions. Mm. Like, literally any argument you can think of is literally an opinion.
Right.
Even when it comes to things that we actually consider, like, morally, like, okay or good or decent, that's still technically an opinion. Mm. And it's really painful. That's what it is, but it is.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's why when it comes to actually talking about what's problematic, that's when I'm just kind of like, I really do not know what to say to this.
Interesting, yeah. And I think we live in a time where just everyone is so sensitive about everything, too.
No, yeah, I agree. But I also agree it's not completely just people becoming more sensitive. I think it's also just people being aware of, like, the nature of how toxic certain things can be.
Right.
So it's just people speaking up about it. Mm. But sometimes I do think it can also fall under the overly sensitive thing.
If you could say anything to, like, somebody younger than you that may be listening to this and is growing up with, like, the same ideas or same wants or same, like, issues surrounding gender identity, what would you say?
I would say to pace yourself, really. Mm. I rushed into everything.
You did.
Like,
you do that a lot, though, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I'm very impulsive. I can't help myself. I'm a very impulsive person. And, like, same thing with my whole thought process. Like, the second I have a thought, I always act on it.
I'm the exact same way.
Like, I can't help myself. Mm. For me, it doesn't even matter if that thought is going to be gone 5 minutes from now.
Right. It's still the most important thing in the world for those 5 minutes.
Yeah, that's how I felt.
Do you also, like, go to the ninth degree with everything and, like, exaggerate everything in your head?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I tend to fixate a lot, and then, like, it's like my thoughts will, like, just follow me all day until I do something.
Do you have one voice in your head?
Yes.
Or more than one?
Just one.
Just one?
And it's just myself yelling at me.
Do you meditate at all?
No.
I'm telling you, I just started recently. It is the secret to all of this.
I mean, I would do yoga sometimes.
Well, you do Bikram, right?
Yeah.
You're a Bikram teacher?
No, I just work at the studio sometimes.
Oh, okay.
But only sometimes.
I fucking hate Bikram.
That's a shame. I could have got you guest passes.
Well, no, I'll take them. Like, let's be honest. When I was 17, I did 30-day challenge in Chicago. And it was so insane. I loved it, but I like to dance when I'm in a yoga class, and my biggest problem in a Bikram class is if you do anything that is not one of those fucking poses, the teacher will immediately yell at you and, like, stop it. And, like, I'm not about that. But I love the heat.
One thing I will say about yoga classes is it really depends on your teacher.
Right.
Like, I took this one teacher's class at my job, and I swear she was, like, some sort of Navy SEAL enthusiast or something.
Oh,
because
my God.
She just kept, like, barking at us, specifically me.
I'm always the same way. I'm the one person that they will fucking call out the entire class.
No, she just kept coming up to me being like, Paul, more, you work here, no excuse, more. And I'm like,
it just takes you out of it. All right, let's get to the good stuff here. Let's talk about your dating life.
Ooh.
You are queer and polyamorous.
Yes.
Okay. How do you navigate those things? And I think the first question is, will you give me a definition of polyamory?
I feel like defining polyamory is a really interesting thing.
Yeah, I have a really hard time doing it, depending on who I'm talking to.
No, yeah, only because there are some people who will label themselves as polyamorous, even though technically the more appropriate, like, term for them would be, like, open relationship.
Open relationships.
But I feel like it's, like,
I mean, me trying to navigate polyamory on The View with those women, I mean, I couldn't get a word in. It was really, really difficult.
We saw.
Yeah, you saw the whole thing. Like, I think I did okay, though, right?
No, yeah, you did fine.
Like, I've tried, but, like, every single one of them said something that I was like, oh, like, how could you say that right now? Okay, keep going.
If it means anything, like, some of the staff at the LGBT Center gave you some props.
Yeah, oh, nice. That makes me really happy.
That's good.
Good.
We saw that you were just trying to get your work
in. I was trying. There was, like, oh, my God. Polyamory, let's go back to it.
Okay. For polyamory, I would say it's when you, even though if you have one partner, right, you're either still open to other partners or you're actively having other partners, whether it be something that is, like, pseudo-romantic or completely romantic.
Right.
Or just some, like, weird hybrid. And I feel like sex isn't always in the equation. It really just depends on the person.
Right, yeah, and the relationship. Yeah.
Some people just want to date multiple people but not have sex with every person they date.
Right, but I think the term open relationship is the opposite of that, where you want to have sex with a bunch of different people but, like, still be in a relationship with somebody, right?
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, there's some cases where there will be people in open relationships where they'll occasionally be open to, like, a date, but they can't have, like, a serious relationship of other people. They can only, like, date people.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So where do you stand on that spectrum?
I actually feel like I'm in the middle of monogamy and polyamory because I feel like I can go either way.
Yeah, I feel the same way.
No, yeah. I feel like if I were to have a partner who was just so serious about monogamy, I could do it as long as all of my boundaries are being, like, respected.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I feel like the thing with a monogamous relationship that I really need is people to respect the fact that if we're going to do this, we can't be seeing each other every day because I will get tired and I will get bored.
And burnt out.
Yeah.
I think that, like, I label myself polyamorous, but I think I'm actually, like, really monogamous in my polyamorous relationships. In the beginning, like, if I start dating somebody, I don't want to be dating anybody else. Like, I want to give everything to that person, especially energetically, like, until we really, really get to know each other. Like, I'm not out there trying to date, like, four people at a time. Like, I just don't have the energy to it. But what makes me polyamorous in my head is, like, at some point in our relationship, if we get to a point where, like, we trust and love each other to a certain extent that, like, there may be room for other relationships in it, that's the type of relationship that I want.
No,
but,
yeah,
like, that is really difficult for people to understand.
I understand that only because when I start to involve myself with someone, I kind of get, like, horse blinds.
For sure.
And then it's, like, really hard for me to look other places. I actually had that problem not that long ago where I was, like, specifically only looking at this one person. Mm-hmm. So when I ended up catching some sort of weird feeling for this guy, I was just like,
what is happening?
Like, I need to focus on this right now.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's another thing that happens to me. Even though I get horse blinds, it's still very fickle for me. I feel like it can easily change.
Right.
I feel like the second I feel like I'm not getting everything that I feel like I need, the intensity or even, like, what word could I use? It wouldn't be necessarily, like, loyalty. Only because that doesn't really fall into this category.
Yeah.
But
the, like, attachment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It gets a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's what happened to me, which allowed me to actively spend more time with this guy and then just, like, start liking this guy. And I was just like, this is not happening right now. I can't do this.
How did that guy identify romantically?
He is also very queer.
Mm-hmm.
He identifies as pansexual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel like even though we have that commonality of, like, queerness, it wouldn't work. Yeah, it wouldn't work. I feel like I have a tendency to like people who are not very serious, which is, like, hard for me because I'm very serious.
Serious how?
I'm very serious about love.
Like, no, but the other people, not serious about love.
They're very lighthearted about love. And that's something that I can't do.
Why do you think you're going for these people that are, like, unattainable then?
Only because it reminds me to not take myself so seriously.
Interesting.
So I feel like sometimes it works out because it creates some sort of, like, balance. And other times it doesn't, only because the other person is not all that, like...
Right. I'm dating somebody right now, and it's new. That loves the same exact way that I love. And I don't think I've ever met somebody, actually, that loves like I love. And, like, I'm so into it, but I'm also, like, seeing how I love, too. And it's, like, intense. I don't know. It's wild. I'm in something so wild right now. And he lives on the other side of the country, which is, like, I'm not mad about right now. You know? Because we, like, have this relationship where we, like, talk all the time and we, like, see each other in little, like, stints, you know? We have, like, vacations together. I don't know. I'm not mad about a long-distance relationship at all. Because you can, like, be – have that crazy, like, you, but you don't necessarily have to see them every single day because it's not even an option.
I understand. I'm super crazy about someone who lives on the other side of this country. So.
Oh, you are?
Yeah.
Really? On the West Coast?
I understand that. Yeah.
But you know them?
We became kind of like friends like last year in August. But then we started getting a little bit more flirtatious around, like, November. Mm. And then it just happened to, like, continue to persist to, like, now. Mm. Yeah.
Aw, you look so like, cute about it, too.
All right, honestly, okay. I mean...
Paul's getting uncomfortable, y'all.
All right, I mean, okay. I feel really comfortable talking about most things, but for some reason, when it comes to the whole sappy side of love, that's when I freeze up.
Well, is it because you think it sounds, like, cheesy?
Yes.
To and other people?
I don't like it, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, and it's like, I feel in extremes. Hmm. Like, I always feel near to nothing or a whole lot.
I'm the exact same way. I understand what you're saying, okay? So, like, you don't have to feel uncomfortable. Just pretend the microphone's not here right now because I get it.
I mean, I am a very corny, cliche person.
Tell me about it. What's the most romantic thing you've ever done?
I mean... I would like to say the whole songwriting aspect, but that's not true. That's not true at all. That's not the most romantic thing I've done. I mean, I'm doing something right now, but I honestly do not want to reveal it because then she'll know about it.
I understand. Okay, can I tell you what I did once?
Yes.
I was dating this specific person, and they did not live here. I made these stickers. I'm not going to say the person's name, but it was like a combo of... my astrological sign, I was a Leo and he was an Aries. So it was like this lion with ram horns. And it said, Nico loves this person. And I plastered these stickers all over New York City. Okay. And then I photographed them all over the city and then made a fucking book and sent it to him. Like, are you kidding me? Like, who am I? Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm even saying that on air right now.
I think that's really adorable.
It's so cute, though, right? It was, like, the cutest thing I've ever done for anybody in my entire life.
I mean, one time I played guitar outside my ex's window.
Yes. For how long?
Like, for, like a while.
Where? In Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, I've also done things where, like, I would sketch some of my partners and, like, have, like, a really romantic cliche, like, poem next to the sketch and give it to them as, like, as a present. I'm also big on surprising people with, like, flowers. I love spontaneous gifts and presents. Like, I don't even,
Are you good at receiving them, too?
I love receiving them, but I don't like asking for them. Mm. So, like, sometimes I'll date people who are not that romantic, and it's just so terrible because I am so romantic.
Right.
And I want this to be, like, a mutual thing.
For sure.
You know, and I feel like sometimes, like, I'll have people who are very romantic. But I have one person who was writing a song about me, and then, like, it ended before I got to hear it.
That sucks. I wonder if the song just died. Like... Did they ever finish the song?
I have no... I should ask her, to be honest.
Yeah, you should definitely ask her. No. How many people have you dated at your old age of 19?
You're right. In high school, I think I dated about, like, 5, maybe 6, 7 people.
Because you graduated high school, what, 2 years ago? 3 years ago? 17.
Two years ago. Eventually 3 years ago.
And you're going to college right now?
I'm already in college. I'll be doing my 3rd year.
That's what I mean. You're in college right now. Yeah, that's what I said. Where are you going?
I go to the Worst CUNY. It's a place called BMCC. Mm-hmm. It's on Chambers Street.
Okay.
Now people know where to stalk me, so that's fun. But luckily the school's so big, they'll never find
me. When I ask you to play guitar, you're going to get a record deal out of all this and everything, so come on.
Honestly.
Let's make it happen. I'm not kidding. Your guitar's right here. Will you play me something?
Depends on what you want to hear.
I don't know. Just, like, Give me your best shot.
Do you want to hear something really romantic or really depressing or?
I want you to play whatever you want. I want you to play what you want people to hear.
Like a personality song.
I'm so in love with you. Yes, it's true. Oh, baby, I tried to deny it, but I just can't hide it with you. What do you see? Ooh.
Oh my god, this is real.
All right, honestly, this is really hard to like keep my composure.
You are killing it. You are killing it.
So,
are y'all hearing this shit?
It's so embarrassing.
That sultry ass voice, come on.
I also wasn't sure if I was doing it in the right key.
That was beautiful.
Because usually I mess up a million times before I pick the key.
Right, no, I understand.
Because sometimes I play it higher. Uh-huh. So.
Come on, give me something else here.
You're quick to judge what you don't know. As if you could know what gets under my skin without being me, being free to know what makes my heart go tick-tock till it finally drops, it finally stops. Little did you know. You don't wanna know. Couldn't really know. Your fragile egotistical minds can't handle what you don't know. My friends told me that I'm traumatized, but from which mediocre event from my life? Being born doesn't mean you're fit for life. I really don't wanna be the bad guy, but maybe it's in my eyes, in my blood coursing through. 'Cause baby, in my dreams, I see nothing but black and blue. Like a pile of dirty laundry, I never seem to do. I'm breaking up inside, it's eating me alive, it's eating me alive. I'm breaking up inside, it's eating me alive. Is eating me alive. Little did you know. You don't wanna know. You couldn't really know. Fragile egotistical minds can handle what you don't know. Maybe in the end we'll all be terrified. Maybe then we'll learn to be a little kind. Cause in my head, I see nothing but black and white. Neon nights, like a postcard with fake smiles. I'm waking up inside, it's eating me alive. I'm waking up inside.
This might be one of the like best episodes that we have ever done in here.
Paul, you are blowing my shit up. Like, I am so happy you came in here. Ugh.
Thank you.
Yes, that was so beautiful. Are you ready to lay some poetry down?
Of course.
All right. Can first tell me who that song was about.
I actually wrote it after my brother had misgendered me, because I was really mad, and originally I was writing an angry song, but then I completely like just crumbled up that paper instead of starting this really sad one. So it's basically just about people's like assumptions on like how I identify on or what people think is best for me, and me being like, well, how can you try to tell me how I personally feel? And basically, yeah, the whole song is me just kind of taking my middle finger and, like, showing it to the world and being like, well, you can't, like, tell me, like, who I am or how I feel or what I should do or all of that, because at the end of the day, I can only be me to my best ability.
Bow down. God. Do you get misgendered at all anymore?
No, not in the slightest.
At all, right?
Yeah. I haven't experienced that in a while. Nearly 2 years, maybe a little bit over that.
Let me ask you a question. Do you feel comfortable knowing that you represent a man over a trans man in 2017 today? And do you feel like sometimes you wish people knew more than they do? I don't know if I asked that properly.
For the first question, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
For the first question, it's actually a yes and no. Because I don't have an issue, per se, with people reading me more as, like, just a cis man versus, like, a trans man.
Right.
But I also do. Only because I don't really see why those two have to be differentiated.
Right.
But I also know that there are people in this world who actually like that it is. Like, specifically, I know there's lots of trans men who actually like that there is a distinction sometimes. But for me personally, I just view it as very limiting. Because oftentimes, if I actually am open about my identity, they'll say things that they think is a compliment, but it's not, because I didn't ask for their two cents. Like, they'll be like, wow, I could have never told.
Yeah, I would have never known.
Like, oh, you pass so well. You look like a real guy.
Like, what the fuck does that even mean?
And I'm just like, sure. I usually respond with something stupid. Like, you look like a real guy, too.
Well, let me ask you this question, then. Do you want to be a larger voice in this community? Is that a goal of yours?
It's not a goal of mine, but I feel like it's something I have to do.
Right. It's a responsibility you have.
Yeah. It's like, don't get me wrong. I said not that long ago at some place at some time, don't remember when or where, but basically they were asking me if I ever feel like I have some sort of obligation to speak up on like queer issues and all of that. Really fun stuff. I don't know why I keep using that adjective.
It's but okay. I enjoy the sarcasm in it.
Good. I'm glad you appreciate my sarcasm. But I don't feel obligated to have to do anything. I do things because I want to.
Right.
But I feel like at this, in the same regard, I feel like this is also kind of something where I do feel the pressure a bit. to step up, but I always try to make sure that if I am stepping up, I'm doing it because I actually want to.
Because you want to. Yeah.
And not out of pure obligation.
Because other people are telling you to. Yeah.
No, yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, I think what I've gathered from the short time that I've gotten to know you, I think that the way that you – this is like I'm doing a read on you real quick. The way that you are actually going to approach this conversation is not in a traditional, like – this is who we are and this is what we stand for type of way, like fist in the air. I think your greatest gift is going to be hitting at it in a subtle creative way that makes a lot more sense to who you are and like what you want to do outside of this conversation. Yeah. And I think this conversation is going to be a catalyst for you getting and becoming much bigger than this conversation.
Yeah, for sure. I've never really been one of those, like, fist in the air kind of people at the protests. Mm-hmm. I'm usually someone who's just kind of silently there.
Right.
Or
well, I mean,
the loudest I'll be is chanting something.
What was Sarah calling you the whole time that we were there?
Buddha.
Buddha and Yoda. She was calling you Yoda and Buddha.
I don't know. But I feel like...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say that, personally... I don't really like aggression, especially when it comes to...
You're a lover. Yeah.
Sure.
Come on. You know you are.
I'm sorry. My toxic masculinity prevents me from dealing with you.
Copy.
But, no, yeah. I feel like I like to reach people through conversation and through art.
Yeah.
And I feel like... anytime I've tried to get there through anger or aggression, no one hears me.
Right.
So that's why I always try to do things in a more calm and collected approach. Mm. Because I feel like when you're yelling at someone, they're not going to listen to you. Mm. They're just going to yell back and hear your words, but not actually listen to your words. Mm-hmm. So I feel like for me personally, like everyone's different. Everyone has different like styles of like fighting for things and getting what they want. Mm-hmm. But the style I do is much more sly and much more like subtle.
Subtle, yeah. Yeah. You're like a ninja, I can tell.
I would much rather kind of hint at what I'm trying to get at rather than be like, I demand my rights right now.
Well, you have such a happy face too, though. Has anyone ever told you that?
I actually usually I have a monotone face, whatever that means.
There's like so much joy in your face. It's really beautiful.
Wow, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, I have two more questions, and then we are going to lay down some poetry for some intro stuff.
Cool.
The first question is, do you love yourself?
Yes and no.
I feel like that's a running theme in this conversation.
Yeah. Hey, I mean,
yeah, it's good. No, I like it.
If you ever want an actual concrete answer for me,
the duality. We're gender queer. We're fluid. It's all happening in here.
I love myself some days more than others.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like it's like an ongoing thing for me where I'm trying to learn how.
Right.
And it's actually really interesting because I'm actually one of those firm believers that you cannot ever really fully love someone or invest in someone until you're fully invested in yourself.
Come on, RuPaul.
Okay.
No, but that is fact. That is like hard, hard fact.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot fill what's like... Nobody else can fill what you're missing in yourself. You know what I mean? Like, nobody else is going to give you what you don't have. You need to have it first and share it with somebody else. That's the only way any sort of relationship is going to work.
No, it's true. And I feel like when you're losing that connection with yourself, that's how a lot of other issues in your life can come up. Like, for example, it's like really interesting. like kind of like how when Sarah tried to ask us about jealousy, I'm a firm believer that usually stems from a lack of actual like self-involvement and self-love.
And confidence, yeah.
Yeah. And yeah. I feel like oftentimes when you do feel a lack of security, even within like a seemingly perfect relationship, maybe the issue is not your partner. Maybe the issue is that you're...
It's you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's really hard for a lot of people to admit.
Right. But nobody wants to admit that.
I am trying to be that person to constantly actually like look at my faults and be like, well, what can I do to make this better? Not for my partner, but for me.
Let me ask you a question, because I did this a lot yesterday, actually. Do you ever reach out to your exes and apologize still today for things that you did?
I have done that. Mm. And my exes have always thought I was weird because of it. Because
I do it
be
all
like
the time.
A couple of years, and I'll be like, hey.
I don't think I ever properly.
See you like one day at 3:57 p.m. I'm really sorry about that.
Yeah. That's so beautiful, though. Like, I applaud that in you. Like, don't ever stop that.
No, yeah. I have a thing. It's kind of like how I said earlier that when I have a thought, because I'm very impulsive with my thoughts, it'll, like, haunt me and follow me around. And I feel like sometimes it'll be a more negative thing, usually surrounding past relationships, which just prompts me to actually message these exes and being like, yo, I am so sorry. Like, I didn't realize how much of a dick I was until this exact second. Like, I mean, like, I knew it, but, like, I didn't have that full realization.
Yeah, totally.
No, yeah. And I feel like a lot of the times these kind of, like, realizations are just symbolic of, like, self-growth and just, like, you, like, fully understanding that, like, other people are other feeling human beings with emotions and thoughts.
We're all our own universes, and we all are like, we are all gods walking, I feel like, gods of our own universes. You know, seriously. Let me ask you a question. Are you super intuitive? And if so, are you, like, do you follow your gut constantly?
I feel like I am super intuitive, but I don't often follow my gut. Only because I'm the kind of person who likes to give people the benefit of the doubt constantly, regardless of what my gut tells me and regardless of what the actual, like, circumstance or situation is. Only because I try to be a very trusting person. And I would say that... Let me see...
Do you remove toxic people from your life? Or do you let them stay?
What a pressing question. I would say sometimes.
Yeah.
I feel like it really depends on the circumstance and how severe. Because I feel like when it comes to like someone being toxic, I feel like that itself can be on a spectrum where it could be like one of those things where it can be half healthy and half just really terrible for you.
And like there's a lesson in it all too.
No, yeah, I'm a firm believer in that. Like there's no such thing as a mistake to me.
Or a coincidence for that matter.
And I would say, I remove people sometimes. I feel like it really depends on what you do and if I feel like how urgent it is, really. Like, if it's like, I really need to remove this person so I can breathe. Or if it's just like, well, this person's like stressing me out a lot, but like it's like bearable. Usually I keep them around.
You ever work with tarot cards at all? Have you ever gotten your own tarot cards? You have?
I have not gotten my own, but I have worked with them.
I feel like you should get some. And I feel like you're going to start tapping into some things that are much, much bigger than yourself, even than you actually already are. And I am so excited to see what you do with it all. Honestly, like, I've had conversations with how many people now in this space, and, like, you are very, very powerful.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
That is one of the nicest things someone has said to me.
It's true, though. Like, I don't throw out compliments just, like, to throw out compliments.
Somehow I don't believe you.
But, really?
I'm joking. I'm joking.
No, I will snap the fuck back real fast. Okay, and then the final question. What is love, Mr. Sappy Ass?
All right. I mean, okay. Since you want to go there.
Yeah, we're going there.
I personally would say that love is something that's in a constant state of evolvement, and it's something that's always changing from person to person, because I feel like one day you could have this really great platonic love towards someone, and one day out of the blue it could evolve into a romantic love and then fade back into a platonic love, and sometimes it just burns out completely. But I don't think that's the end of love. I think love is cyclic, and I feel like when love dies out between two people, it somehow finds a way to come back, but through another person. Or one day in the future with that same person. And I feel like it's just something that's in a constant state of rotation. And I feel like there is no 100% concrete definition of love, yeah, only because it's something that is so individualized and varies from person to person. But for me, since I am a very fickle person at times, it's something that is constantly changing and constantly evolving, and that's the most beautiful thing to me, that I don't have to worry about how I love someone today because I know I'll love them tomorrow even if it's not in the same nature.
Mm. Oh my God, is that beautiful. When are you, like, writing a book? This poetry book is happening?
I'm actually working on a book, so yeah. I'm working on a poetry
book. Like, yo,
book.
I straight up think, I'm calling it right now, I straight up think you are going to be a giant voice of your generation and, like, other generations. Yo, everyone watch out. Paul, what's your last name?
Aviles.
Paul Aviles. I'm calling it right now. Paul Aviles. Thank you for coming on today. I can, like, say, like, I love you, Paul. I really do. Hey, guys. This has been a pretty big week for the LGBTQIA plus community. On October 11th, we had National Coming Out Day, which is always a huge day for the community. I posted on Instagram that love always wins, right? And you will always love people the exact same way that you love yourself. So be true to yourself. Unapologetically fall madly in love with yourself. On October 18th, we have Spirit Day. Every October, millions of Americans join GLAAD by wearing purple on Spirit Day to take a stand against bullying and as a symbol of support for lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender youth being bullied. 8 out of 10 LGBT youth report being bullied, and you can help raise awareness and take a stand for them. So on October 18th, wear some purple and post. Spread the word. Hashtag Spirit Day. You can visit glaad.org/Spirit Day to learn all about it. Paul, you are such a beautiful human being. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I was so excited when I met you at the center. Yeah, you just get me excited about the future. If you guys want to know more about Paul, check out his Instagram and Twitter. I'm just going to spell it out for you. It's at PaulSamueLAviles. And Eminem, I don't know if anyone saw it. Whew, he is back, y'all. I mean, I am totally speechless, and I can't believe I'm even about to do this, but I am going to attempt to read the lyrics for it, fully honoring the man that put this together. Like, holy shit. Oh, my God. I don't know. I'm just going to try to do this. It's the calm before the storm right here. Wait, how was I gonna start this off? I forgot. Oh, yeah. There's an awfully hot coffee pot. Should I drop it on Donald Trump? Probably not. And that's all I got till I come up with a solid plot. Got a plan and now I got a hatchet like a damn Apache with a tomahawk. I'm gonna walk inside a mosque on Ramadan and say a prayer that every time Melania talks, she's got a... Oh, I'm gonna stop. But we better give Obama props, because what he got in the office now is a kamikaze that'll probably cause a nuclear holocaust. And while the drama pops and he waits for shit to quiet down, he'll just gas his plane up and fly around till the bombing stops. Intensifies, heightened tensions are rising. Trump, when it comes to giving a shit, you're stingy as I am. Except when it comes to having the balls to go against me, you hide them. Cause you don't got the fucking nuts like an empty asylum. Racism's the only thing he's fantastic for. Cause that's how he gets his fucking rocks off and he's orange. Yeah, sick tan. That's why he wants us to disband. Cause he cannot withstand the fact that we're not afraid of Trump. Fucking walk on eggshells, I came to stomp. That's why he keeps screaming, drain the swamp. Cause he's in quicksand. It's like we take a step forward, then backwards. But this is his form of distraction. Plus, he gets an enormous reaction when he attacks the NFL, so we focus on that instead of talking Puerto Rico or gun reform for Nevada. All these horrible tragedies, and he's bored and would rather cause a Twitter storm with the Packers. Then says he wants to lower our taxes. Then who's gonna pay for his extravagant trips back and forth with his fam to golf resorts and his mansions? Same shit that he tormented Hillary for, and he slammed
slandered, then does it more from his endorsement of Bannon, supports for the Klansmen, tiki torches in hand for the soldiers that's black and come home from Iraq, and it's still told to go back to Africa, fork and dagger in the racist 94-year-old grandpa who keeps ignoring our past historical deplorable factors. Now, if you're a black athlete, you're a spoiled little brat for trying to use your platform or your stature to try to give a voice who don't have one. He says you're spitting in the face of vets who fought for us, you bastards. Unless you're a POW who's tortured and battered. Because to him, you're zeros. Because he don't like his war heroes captured. That's not disrespecting the military. Fuck that, this is for Colin. Ball up a fist and keep that shit balled up like Donald Trump the bitch. He's gonna get rid of all immigrants and he's gonna build that thing up taller than this. Well, if he does build it, I hope it's rock solid with bricks. Because like him in politics, I'm using all of his tricks. Because I'm throwing that piece of shit against the wall till it sticks. And any fan of mine who's a supporter of his, I'm drawing in the sand a line you're either for or against. And if you can't decide who you like more, you're split on who you should stand beside. I'll do it for you with this. Fuck you. The rest of America, stand up. We love our military and we love our country, but we fucking hate Donald Trump. Fuck yeah, Eminem. Nico.